It's here and now.
Want me to put your name in this?
No, that's okay. Fine.
I'll sign right on the horizon
perfect.
Line.
Perfect.
A new book by Richard Ford is a big deal. That's why his fans lined up recently to have him sign copies of his first in 6 years here at Brookline Booksmith in Brookline, Massachusetts. They also brought dog-eared copies of Ford's other books, including the Pulitzer Prize-winning Independence Day, and a short story collection that included one of his.
This is a story that I wrote about Ray Carver. Because he and I and my wife, back in 1981, went to a dog track. And I came home and sat down the day after he left and wrote about him and me and my wife going to the dog track. That's why it's called Going to the Dogs.
Richard Ford is always telling stories, and his latest is called Canada. The narrator is an English teacher named Del Parsons, in his 60s now, looking back on what happened when he and his twin sister, Berner, were 15 in Great Falls, Montana. It's 1960. Their father, Bev, is in a financial jam. He convinces their mother that robbing a bank will fix things. So they do, robbing a bank across the border in neighboring North Dakota. Quickly caught, they're sent to prison and disappear from the kids' lives. Berner runs away. Del ends up in Canada. And as Richard Ford told Here and Now's Alex Ashlock, as Del looks back on it, that bank robbery made no sense.
For the most part, when normal human beings rob banks, say people other than Pretty Boy Floyd and Bonnie and Clyde, who kind of figure in this story sort of minimally, that it never makes sense when people decide to rob a bank. And it became so clear to me when I started thinking about why these people would do this to settle some rather smallish debt. It gave me an opportunity to sort of plumb around in why people would rob banks, and it became clearer and clearer. It never makes sense. You always know, whether you recognize it or not, that you're going to get caught. You're not going to make a lot of money. You're not going to change your life forever. What you're going to do is go to jail, which is what happens to these people.
Well, gather around me, children, a story I will tell about Pretty Boy Floyd, the outlaw. The homie knew him well. It was in the town of Shawnee on a Saturday afternoon. His wife beside him in a wagon.
And then what happens to Del Parsons is he gets taken across the border into Canada. His life takes all kinds of interesting and not fatal for him, but fatal turns. But when he looks back on what his parents did, he kind of sees it a little bit differently than his twin sister Berner did. It seems like she sort of loses her way because of what her parents did, but Del doesn't, and he doesn't seem to judge his parents harshly for basically altering his life forever in the way they did.
That seems true. I would say that the difference between Berner and Del, they are fraternal twins, is that Berner failed to exercise sufficient both imagination and empathy for her parents, and Del was able to exercise empathy and patience with his parents, really, as well as imagination, and for those reasons, and explicitly, as his life turns out, through the agency of those reasons, has a successful life in this book. The book, when I got to the end of the book, writing it, I felt this huge sort of sense of glee, almost, that I knew I was going to be able to write an affirming end to this book. And it was because the book had affirmed imagination, patience, a kind of forbearance towards others, a sense of empathy for people, a curiosity toward the world, all of which, in a way, Berner doesn't have until really at the end of her life.
Oh, Mother, dear, and Daddy, too, we wish that we were there with you. It's not the same since you were. We'll see you, Mother.
So it sounds like you didn't have that ending until you got to the end. You didn't know you were going to have that affirmative ending.
Well, I always want to have an affirmative ending, and sometimes I've failed. I mean, you can't, unless you're just a fool, make black turn white. But in this instance, I thought that I had the materials for affirmation. I knew where the book would end. I knew that it would end in Windsor, Ontario, and that he would be a Canadian. But I didn't know exactly what words I was going to use, and I didn't know exactly what kinds of emotional material I was going to be able to draw on.
There's a line in the book that you have to have something that you can relinquish, or you have to have something, I guess, that you can lose or you can afford to lose. Can you explain what that is and what that means?
Well, I think it's Mildred who says it to Dell as she's taking him across the border from Montana to Saskatchewan, virtually kidnapping him, which is what she does do, in fact, because he goes against his will. What she means is that you have to be able to decide what's more important than what. And that in the course of deciding what's more important than what, you become an adult. You graduate from being a child, in which I feature the life is more or less the life of acceptance of what your parents give you in a kind of a almost mélange of moral experience. At a certain point, you just have to say, I can dispense with this in favor of that. And that, for me, is what we all do if we succeed in life.
So, in a way, is this a book about loss?
Everybody in the book suffers a loss, there's no doubt about that. It's a book about doing what I think we all have to do as successful adults if we get to be that, which is to say, experience loss and get beyond it. Experience loss and overcome it in behalf of the rest of our lives. I mean, when you put it in those terms, I can think about other books that I've written, seems to be about those same things. I guess it's something I'm interested in and hadn't quite put together until you said that. It's not about loss, it's about the consequences of loss and how you survive it.
And you obviously, everyone has losses, but your father died when you were 16, and the narrator of the story is looking back on his life when it changed when he was 15. So
I guess I must have seen that, because in my own life, that, as you said, that happened. I must have seen that moment, 15, 16, as a transitional moment in any boy or girl's life, in which you leave behind certain crucial vestiges of childhood and take on the inchoate character of an adult. I mean, that for me, more than it might be developmentally true or sociologically true, is dramatic. That change in the life of a kid is a dramatic change. Things that were true are no longer. Things that weren't true are now true.
And that's why the border is so significant in the book.
It is. It's a book about borders. And borders, both national, nation-state borders. It's about psychic borders. It's about moral borders. It's about the borders between one age and another. It's about the border between right and wrong, and how you get across that border before you know it and can't go back and reclaim the right. I mean, we've all had the experience in which we do something that doesn't turn out well. And we almost, in a virtual way, look over our shoulder to the day before when nothing had happened and we thought, you know, we had to do this, whatever it was, but in fact we didn't, and we can't get back there anymore. And to me, that's poignant.
Richard Ford with Here and Now's Alex Ashlock. You can read an excerpt of Richard's new novel, Canada, at hereandnow.org. Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Please join us again here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.